This is Preston of That Atheist Show, and you're listening to Inciting Incident, because where you are is the place to be on a Friday night.
It's Friday, and it's 7 p.m., which means it's time for the Inciting Incident podcast, supported by our patrons and available on Libsyn, Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Android, LiveJournal, Google Plus, The Hard Harry Show, News Radio, WHP 580, Rock and Emily's Bed Radios that are somehow appropriate for children that age, Most Tin Cans Connected with String, Tumblr, Snapchat, Zanga, LimeWire, WinMX, Napster. We'll have to spell it with two Y's there to escape Big Brother. The DCI, the Enchantment Under the Sea Dance, the Plate and Pete and Pete's Mother's Head, and any other podcast app that somehow escaped this list. And now, here's your host, Al Lehman.
Welcome to Inciting Incident number 50. People have put up with this shit for this long, and somehow we still have a show.
I can't believe it.
I can't either. I'm Al Lehman, as the wonderful Jesse Dollimore introduced me, and joining me is my co-host, Brian the Fuzzy. Welcome back.
I am always delighted to be the Costello to your Abbott, or at least I think I'm the fat one in this equation, so hey, Abbott.
Indeed, all indeed. Right. And joining us is the person pretty much responsible for getting this podcast started. I'm not sure whether or not that's a good thing.
We're responsible for many of the things that go on in the wee hours of the morning in this house.
Indeed. Welcome from Scathing Atheist, God-awful movies, and definitely some of my favorite appearances on Thomas Smith's Atheistically Speaking, Eli Bosnick. Eli, welcome to the show.
And I'm here to apologize. Look, mistakes. Had I known that my actions would cause this podcast to take place, I would never have done it, and I would like to say I'm an alcoholic. Myself in rehab. My wife, I want like a blonde woman in a business suit to just come and like edge into frame next to me and be like, it's okay, and I want to know that I forgive him, and he's a strong man, and he was tempted by Satan, and now he's not anymore.
Well, you know, in the immortal words of Richard Jenny, whenever you speak in public, there's always the outside danger that someone will listen to you.
Yeah.
And we have repeatedly.
His name's Caitlyn Jenny now, you fucking bitch. Come on these shows. You don't know who these people are. You don't vet them.
You're terrible people.
Yeah, we got introduced to you just by happenstance. My sister heard about Noah's show probably a year ago and finally introduced me to it because she lives down where Ken Ham is building a giant boat.
Has built a giant boat.
It's open. It's ready.
And yep. Tax exempt.
And they crushed it, by the way. They only need something like 4 to 5 times the amount of people to show up every day this year that showed up to their opening. But yeah, it's going to be great. They're going to crush it.
Don't worry. God will make it happen. So, first of all, we're recording this several weeks in advance because we wanted the person who inspired the podcast on our 50th episode. So forgive this if this is a little bit dated and Eli has already debated all of these people by now. You just tweeted out a video called White Men Asking SJW Questions. And because you challenged any of them to a debate in person or on their show for free, I would love to hear what you have to say about some of these questions.
So I watched the video, and it's interesting. It's it's such a, at this point, it's such a tired set of ideas. They're so easily either Googleable or answerable that even the smallest amount of education would make this video obsolete. So what I want to say is, I've said it before, I will continue to say it, I will always debate anybody on any topic. You don't have to be one of these big YouTubers. You don't even have to have a podcast. You can get on Skype with me. I just did a gun debate on Atheistically Speaking. I had six people who didn't have shows, didn't want to be on a show, who just wanted to talk to me, get on Skype. And I sat there and we ate sandwiches and we chatted and we had a one-on-one debate. And we had a, because my interest is in exchanging ideas. However, if you use your platform, as many of the people in that video do, to bully people who should otherwise be welcomed into the movement, then you have to expect to come eventually face to face with someone like me who is smarter than you and better at this than you. And it's just at this point, it's just a point of fact that I talk about these subjects enough that in the debates that I've had on this subject, when people end up admitting that they drunk tweeted a hate group and defending the Disney crones, I call it a win. And I'm not trying to shit on anybody, but that's the things that happen. You know, and this is my problem that happens a lot in these conversations is everybody's sort of pounding chests and going like, sup, bro? Sup? Sup? You know, like, stop bothering Steve Shives. Steve Shives doesn't want to talk to you. Talk to me. You know? You don't automatically get to fight the guy at the end of Street Fighter. You got to fight. Let me be your Chun-Li. And I haven't said that. I've said that many times today. And not always about debate.
Al, I think you actually got that reference.
Yes, I do.
Eli, I'm really happy that you used one word in particular, bully. I'm so happy to hear people actually calling out for what it is. I mean, I've had this in conversations with people about about politics. I have a pretty left of center perspective most of the time, but when I get involved in people who are so firmly on the right in conservative extremes, I just want them to admit that either their party is actively cheating to try and win elections or to put policy forward, or that they're just acting like bullies and want to act like bullies and don't want people calling them out on their shit anymore.
Yeah. And the thing that's so crazy about this that I think they don't understand is that it hurts their causes. I mean, you can't tell me at this point in history you're a men's rights activist without 7,000 walls going up with me going, okay, is this person part of the mass of distractionary internet trolls that use concern trolling and distraction tactics to try and derail conversation, or is this person trying to help people? And I've been contacted by people who are genuinely trying to help people because of the volunteership I've done with RAIN, because of the different kinds of things, and they're looking to connect to resources. But I hear MRA and my walls go up. Now, I try to be polite and I'm able to sort of moderate that behavior, but imagine how horrible that is for someone who's concerned with the real issues that face men today. Imagine how terrible it is to be a men's rights activist talking about rape today when the loudest voices in your movement, when the loudest voices on and offline are just using your cause to distract from an equally problematic issue.
We had this conversation a while ago and we sort of touched on the idea of the whole Gamergate controversy and what that ended up being. And there was one article in particular that I brought up on the show and that I enjoyed reading about a journalist or a blogger's experience going into a subreddit community for MRAs and really exploring what it is that they're talking about. And it seems like for a lot of people who aren't that extremely loud, stereotypical sort of person that you imagine with the label MRA, it seems like they want a safe space of their own.
Absolutely. Yeah. They were just talking about Inside the Red Pill was that article.
Yes. Yes.
You're talking about. Yeah. And I recommend exploring those forums because it's absolutely a safe space. It's a safe space by every definition, except there's a therapist there. these are places where these people are venting and getting out their feelings, and that's completely understandable. But one of the things that I always think is really important, and one of the things that really got me started on social justice when I was in college, is getting inside these worlds, not to argue, but to listen. And the major thing that changed me in favor of social justice that was a major factor was I read Neil Strauss's The Game, which if anybody hasn't read it, I mean, it's a very hard book to read. I wouldn't pay for it. I wouldn't support some of the people near it, but because it's about pickup artists, which is basically how to trick women into fucking you.
Yes.
The book. And it doesn't work, and most of them are liars, and they've done some pretty extensive research on this, and most PUAs aren't actually able to use these techniques, and most PUAs actually have less sex than the average person, and have huge issues with confidence, and they have higher percentages of sexual problems and difficulties, and there's a whole bunch of writing on that subject. But the thing that really struck me is I read it because someone was like, hey man, because I'm a magician, and at the time, one of my teachers was like, honestly, this book is garbage, but he's got a bunch of ways that you can walk up to crowds. You should look at it. So I read the book, and there's this moment in there, in that book, where he's quoting someone talking on a forum, this 17-year-old talking on a forum. And the 17-year-old talks about how he finally got his first, he finally had sex with his first lady, and he got her there, and he was fucking and fucking and fucking and fucking and fucking, and he couldn't come, and it was so stupid that he couldn't come, and like, what a dumb bitch, and blah, blah, blah. And what struck me about that moment, and the moment in the book is supposed to be like, look at this young man who was successful with these techniques, but what I saw was, look at how that young man was damaged by that environment. Look at the pain he went through. And if you read it, it's fairly early on in the book. You can hear the pain of a kid who doesn't understand why a sexual experience that he tricked his way into didn't feel good, and why it confused him, and why he's hurting now. And the problem is these communities, and I want to bring it, the lens back out, it's not just the PUAs, but it's also the anti-SJW. It's also the neocon communities. They reinforce those cognitive dissonance experiences you have where usually you learn, and instead they go, no, 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 no. See, that was just SJWs and cucks trying to get in your head. It's just trying to get in your head. And that's what you hear all the time, is every time some of these, you know, prominent anti-SJW figures, and I'll use TJ from The Amazing Atheist as an example. You know, he was affected by the blog Martin Hughes wrote about him. He was affected by it. It changed part of his mind. He was upset by it because he was being answered back by someone who was in his community who he very clearly respected. And what he did is he went down to the comments and he read 35,000 comments by three people who all have 10,000, you know, YouTube comments apiece. And he had those beliefs reinforced so that instead of him having the opportunity to go, well, I don't know that experience, I do want to have this conversation, his response was, suck my dick.
Wow. And I've really got to ask you something, Eli, because I think you have a lot more experience in this community than I do. And that is, I understand, I don't like, but I understand a lot of the religious resistance to, you know, identities and sexualities. You know, I don't like it, but I see where they're coming from. Why is this happening in the skeptic community? Why is there so much vitriol being spewed by people like TJ and the other people who were in that video that we saw?
It's an environment of hyper-skepticism that always comes in any othered community. And it's true of atheists, but it's basically what happens is you figure out something that lots of red pill thinking. Mm-hmm. It's what, or blue pill thinking, depending on what you're, I forget which one it is, but you figure out that something a lot of people believe is true is not true. And then on the other side of that wall, you develop a sense of hyper skepticism. And I forget who put this, but someone put this really well. He said, you know, you make it to the other side of the wall, and then all of a sudden, feminists need to prove to you that the sky is blue. All of a sudden, you know, maybe jet fuel doesn't burn that hot. You're in search of that next. And like, let's be honest with ourselves. Figuring out that God isn't real, especially at a young age, which many atheists do, we might not come out as at a young age, but figuring out that God isn't real, that's a rush. That's something you know that the grown-ups don't know. It's a little bit of a secret. And that's where that conspiracy theory urge comes from. And I've talked about this before. We have more 9/11 truthers in atheism than I would say the religious do. We have more MRAs than I would say the religious do. And where these come from is it comes from a sense of hyper-skepticism. And the other thing that really comes into it is it's about being smarter than empathy.
I'd say that confirmation bias plays a really big part in this on any side of any debate. And arguments that I've gotten into with people online, because it seems like it's a corruption of the Socratic method of argument, where you're just constantly questioning, even to find some place to trip them up. Only you're not actually asking questions; you're just making the conversation more and more inane until the person gives up in frustration.
Right, exactly, and that's a common tactic. But I think one of the other things that really comes up a lot is the nature of I've learned to debate in a certain manner, but I haven't learned to listen. And especially when it comes to social justice issues, because it's often about experience and not facts, right? You know, when someone says, it is scary to be this, it hurts to be this, I don't like environments where this happens. You know, if you're in a position of privilege, your answer to that is almost always by definition, come on, you know, it's fine. I have this and I, you know, you want to prove to them ontologically why someone shouldn't feel a certain way. And that sort of comes back to what I was saying about is being too smart for empathy. It's super easy for white guys to be like, well, I know that if a police officer approached me, I would simply say, what's the problem, officer? Raise my hands, be calm, be present, and I would be just fine. And it's like, okay, man, like, do you have 400 years of this kind of culture? No. Do you want to read about it? No. All right, then. Back to Gamergate forums you go. You know, the grown-ups are talking.
I'm going to make this my new bumper sticker slogan when it comes to, especially the mentioning kind of tangentially the whole Black Lives Matter thing. Just every time somebody comes up with the either the All Lives Matter response or something trying to inject basically their white person self, because let's be honest, I am white. I live in the suburbs. I know a lot of white people. I just want to go back to that line. It's not about you.
Yes.
Right. This conversation is not about you. And I think actually that's the biggest thing. People want to inject themselves and their own experiences into everything without bothering to think of whether or not it's warranted in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. You hit the nail. Absolutely. It's not about you is something that is impossible for people to hear. And it's harder for smart people to hear, especially when it means it's not about your opinion. Go ahead.
Right. And that becomes part of the larger problem at work here, which is how do you either get that point across in a way that doesn't demean the other person's opinion, or how do you even get that point across to a person in general? I figure like anybody who answers that could be like the next leader of the free world.
I mean, honestly, you know, the problem really is that people always get convinced by the people they already trust. You know, I cannot tell you how many times I have made a point on Facebook or Twitter or on the show, and someone's been like, you don't fucking know what you're talking about, USJW, cunt piece of shit. And then Noah will comment, nah, I agree with Eli. And they're like, you know what, Noah? You made a good point, man. And I'm like, you fuck yourself forever. And it's because, and as well they should, they respect Noah. They respect Noah's intelligence, and they take his opinion more seriously than they would take mine. And so the truth of the matter is that a lot of the stuff that I do, which is, you know, speaking about leaders and the language they do, speaking about quote unquote leaders in the atheist movement and trying to make sure that they're engaged in a conversation with the social justice side of the movement, is so that they know that they can reach downward, just as I can reach downward. And trust me, I would get way more views, way more followers if I chose the other side of this conversation. It's the age of the internet. And I'm funny enough, and I know the arguments enough that I could be like, ooh, I need a safe space. His name's Bruce, motherfucker. It's easy. It's easy, cheap shots. And by punching down, you almost never see consequences. Yeah. We live in the first time in history when punching down gets you a smidgen of consequences, and we're losing our shit about it. Like, for years, white guys have just been like, fuck you, everyone that's slightly below me on the social ladder, and now it's like, hey, man, you probably shouldn't do that. And it's like, oh my God, SJW is everywhere! America's turning the tides! And it's the same fucking song. I just finished Kelly Kullberg's book, Veritas, The Quest for Truth at Harvard or whatever it is.
Yeah, I remember you guys talking about that. Yeah,
and in one of the chapters, she gets shouted down. This is in 1991. She gets shouted down by liberal students, and she's like, I'm worried that the liberals are taking over the universities. And it's like, hey, Kelly Kahlberg, you should meet Peter Boghossian. He thinks that happens too. But 20 years later.
Yeah, and coming from someone who goes to a school in the same conference as Harvard,
yeah.
I can for sure say that nobody gives enough of a shit there to actually start shouting someone down. They are too busy playing Pokemon Go and looking at their phones to actually shout someone down. I mean, even on the corners of the streets, we have people, you know, Jehovah's Witnesses, like people from all different parts of the here's a book because you're a terrible person community who nobody pays any attention to whatsoever.
And that's the other thing too, is that people forget what not free speech is, what free speech versus not free speech is actually like, you know. And I use this example all the time, and so I'm a little bit of a broken record, but like, we live in a country where you can stand a certain distance from an abortion clinic and just yell at all the women who walk in that building. You're just allowed to. You're just telling, hey, fuck you, fuck you, fuck, and fuck you. And fuck you. And you're allowed to do that. The cops will come and be like, yeah, that guy's allowed to do that. Don't push him. He's allowed. You gotta leave that guy alone. That's the world of free speech we live in. When someone uses their free speech to call you out for the things that you say and the things that you do, that's not less free speech. That's more free speech. And you know, it's just something I brought up and people misinterpreted pretty badly, which is that if the radical free speech of someone like Milo, Nero on Twitter, right? This Milo Yiannopoulos guy, the Breitbart writer.
Yeah.
If we all agree that the radical free speech of Milo is acceptable and he should be allowed to say the things he says, like trans people shouldn't be accommodated and are mentally ill, which is not only a lie, and he probably knows it, but a dangerous, violence, dangerous environment supporting lie, right? It's not just a lie. It is a dangerous lie for the people he's saying it to, right? Because we look at suicide rates. We know what hostile environments do to trans people. We're aware of those statistics, right? And we all still agree he should be able to say that.
Yep.
When students use their free speech to interrupt him, that is actually still more speech. Now, a lot of people confuse that with, well, when you shout someone down, there's less speech and there's not free speech anymore. And that's actually not true, because the people doing the shouting are expressing a different form of radical free speech. And to say that someone who runs on stage and shouts into the microphone when Milo is talking is the unacceptable level of dangerous, whereas Milo telling a 19-year-old trans kid his first time away from home, or her first time away from home, that they're mentally ill and shouldn't be accommodated, it's isn't too dangerous, should be acceptable, should be allowed, shows that we both have a line. You've just drawn yours at the life of the kid, and I've drawn mine at Milo's ability to say whatever he wants, whenever he wants.
Mm-hmm. It seems like there's, talking about just basic cognitive dissonance and people not really knowing, I guess, how to argue.
Don't talk about Tom and Cecil that way.
I will talk about them however I please. I was not on that interview, you bastard. I guess it's the arguments that I see about this idea is people don't seem to have in their head there's a difference between free speech and consequence-free speech.
Absolutely.
And the idea of censorship, that is a word that I get. That is a word every time I see it or hear it, somebody say it, it triggers my inner Inigo Montoya. It's like, you keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Right.
Censorship has a clear, explicit definition about government and authority stopping speech. It has nothing to do with somebody else saying, I disagree with you.
Right. Or a crying, screaming teenager taking your microphone.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? That's just a bad child behaving badly. It's not a political position. But you don't get to call one speech and the other not.
Right. Is the thing.
Indeed. So, Eli, I'm curious because, you know, I think a lot of people who might be tuning into this conversation are surprised at what we're talking about. How is it you managed to bridge basically being an activist and, you know, a fighter for quote unquote SJW culture and all the other slurs that the so-called regressive left does? How do you bridge that with making dick jokes at Christian movies?
And that's interesting. It's a question. It's funny because it's a question that only gets brought up by one person. And it only gets brought up, it gets brought up by two people. It gets brought up by interviewers asking me how I do it. And it gets brought up by people who want to point out that it somehow makes me a hypocrite. But here's the thing. And the example I always give is this. It's an inside joke. I prove myself every time I'm asked seriously about these issues to be an ally, which means that a trans person or a person of color or a gay person who listens to my show and hears me say vile, you know, no holds barred roast comedy goes, heads on side. And they can turn it off. But the truth of the matter is I can't count the amount of tweets and messages I get in a month that are people being like, you're an SJW, blah, 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 blah. I probably get one a month of someone going, hey, you know, I really didn't like that joke. That hurt me. You know, and we get one of those a month. And my response is always the same. Hey, I'm really sorry that hurt you. I hope it didn't make you feel less than. I hope you know that we take on all subjects and that, you know, we hold nothing sacred and that's the way that we do our comedy. But if it made you feel like we don't care about you, I want you to know that's not true and I'm sorry. And every single time, without exception, they go, it's fine. I just wanted you to know. Because, you know, people want to check in. Maybe it's their first time hearing the show. Maybe they don't know. And when you ally yourself in that way, everything comes open. And if anyone should be attacked by SJWs, it should be me, right? I've said things 10 times worse than Sargon of Akkad ever will on my show, right? You know, but the difference is you listen to my show and you go, oh, Eli doesn't mean that. And then you listen to Sargon's show or Thunderfoot show and you go, no, this person's not joking. Right. This person's trying to represent an intellectual position. And that's the difference. You know, the thing that was the reason why everyone got all up in arms, people use the Tosh.0 example, right? Daniel Tosh made the rape joke in the middle of the show.
Yeah.
You know, the reason why people got up in arms about Tosh doing that wasn't because he made a rape joke. It's not like the first rape joke that's ever happened. There are funny rape jokes. There are comedians who use rape jokes well. You know, George Carlin had a fantastic rape joke. Yeah, exactly. Throughout history, we can reference that in comedy. The reason why everyone turned on Tosh is he was getting heckled, got lazy, and attacked a person using a rape joke. He represented an ideology and used it to attack a person. Mm-hmm. Right? And as someone who's been on stage and been a stand-up and dealt with hecklers, you know, let's all get this person isn't a heckler stopper, right? And that's why he got the feedback in the way he did, is he stood up in a room full of people and said, wouldn't it be funny if this happened to her right now? Which is not a joke.
No,
right?
No,
it's just a threat, and it's something scary, and it's something that women experience as part of their lives on a pretty regular basis, at least the fear of it, and certainly the action of it, if you look at any statistic you care to name. So wouldn't it be funny? No, it really wouldn't. That's not a joke. You didn't make a joke. You made a slightly veiled threat, and that's why you got the feedback you did. And what was interesting is in the comedy community, you saw very few people understand that. People were like, I could say, Andy Kaufman taught us to say whatever we want. Lenny Bruce taught us to say whatever we want. And it's like, bros, you need to listen to some fucking albums. Lenny Bruce, as nonsensical as his comedy is, and most people haven't heard it, so don't, but as nonsensical as most of Bruce's stuff is, Bruce never would have been like, hey, cats and kittens, let's rape this dude in the third row. It's never something that would be a part of his lexicon. And if you aren't a comedian and you don't understand the difference between object and subject in humor, then you really can't speak to that. What you really want to do is you want to say mean shit and then run back. You want to mot in the mean shit and then you want to run back to the Bailey and be like, no, it's comedy. Comedy. I'm a comic.
It was satire, right?
Satire. Exactly. You know, the Bailey of satire.
Eli, the way I've seen it, and I've gone through the database, so to speak, once I was familiar with you, I really went back and listened to not only everything you guys did, but appearances you made on other shows, because, like I said, you inspired me. So what I've always compared...
And I apologize for that. And it's time we need to drop it. I'm moving on. One woman comes back in. Again, Jesus, I forgive him.
But, you know, I've always considered it like Carlin or Patton Oswalt or a lot of these other people who can weave verbal poetry. They don't necessarily mean what they say, but the order and tone of those words is funny, which is why I love the vulgarity for charity you guys did. You guys even made fun of each other, and it was awesome, but we know you don't hate each other. That's right. What I love about it, and that's what you pointed out much more eloquently than I ever could.
Yeah, they don't hate each other. That's why they've got a podcast that's almost 300 episodes long.
Inciting Incident couldn't keep bringing you commentary, interviews, and fantastic guests without help from you, the patrons. You can support the podcast on a monthly basis at patreon.com/incitingincident, which gives you access to many great rewards, including a free t-shirt if you pledge $5 or more. You can also support the show by subscribing, rating, reviewing, and commenting. To contact them about ideas, guests, disagreements, fisticuffs, salmon slapping, rebel rousing, or just plain old tomfoolery, you can email them at incitingincidentpodcast@gmail.com. On Facebook at facebook.com/incitingincidentpodcast, or yell into a tin cup and hope it's connected to one of our aforementioned string networks. And now, back to the show.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. It wouldn't have lasted if we hated each other. And you know, a great example of this that I think is so funny is our relationship with Tom and Cecil. Like, there are we get an email, I would say once every couple of months, of people being like, "Hey man, I just want you to know Tom and Cecil are good guys." And I'm like, "Yeah, they are. They're great guys. They came here to New York to hang out. I'm going to England with them in October. Very much looking forward to it."
And I'll be stopping by Glory Hole Studios in about a month. So
nice. Excellent. I want you to bring them a New York pizza.
I will.
Bring them a New York pizza that says it was a snarky email on it in pizza.
Can I top it with Danish?
Yes. Top it with Danish. It's fair.
Everybody who's not familiar with cognitive dissonance right now is going, "What the fuck is Al talking about?
Why would I talk
about? Who cares? Funny to us, damn it.
I'm not listening to this show. This episode 50 is done. I'm not. 49 episodes is where they lost it, man."
Yeah, that's where we lost it. Not the very first one where we tried to pick up the ball in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. Or not the one where we had the person trying to get TJ Kirk to come on our show. And, so, you know, moving a little bit to the work that you guys do, I'm sure you've told this story before, but how did you sort of really get into riffing Christian movies specifically? Like, what brought that out of you?
Well, I always liked terrible movies. I've always been The Room and Troll 2, way before people watch, and people watching bad movies is a relatively new phenomenon, but it's been a cult. I mean, you literally, there was a time when you passed around VHSs and you were like, "Dude, no, it's called Troll 2. It's made by a dentist and his 12 friends and you gotta watch it." And you would hand this off to your buddy, or you hear about a thing online. And I always loved terrible movies.
I got a great sci-fi flick. It's called Space Mutiny.
Exactly. You get it. And you know, I knew Noah and Heath casually. And anytime there was a Christian movies are always fodder for making fun of them. And me and my buddies just sit in the back and basically would do what I do on GAM. We'd just do it loudly at the back of Now You See Me Too. And we still do. Like, I got kicked out of Now You See Me Too a month ago. Like, we were all laughing in the middle of a very dramatic scene. And the usher came over and he was like, and I was like, "We're kicked out." And he was like, "Yeah." And I was like, "Ah!" Because it's been a while. I'm a grown-up now. Like, it was nice. That's always been a part of it. And I had done a couple of segments on Scathing. And then I lost this corporate job I'd been doing. We'd done a couple of sort of god-awful movies. And I lost this corporate job. And I literally called Noah to just be like, "Hey, man, like, I'm really enjoying the show. But just a heads up, probably going to have to be an Uber driver or find some work somewhere. Like, don't really know what I'm going to do. I've had the same job for 10 years. But I'll let you know." And he was like, "Well, why don't we try the show?" And I was like, and I was mortified and very much against it. And luckily I had let Noah, because I was so sure three people were going to patronize the show. It was going to be a $3. And one guy was going to just tweet at me like, "What's the matter? Fuck you." And I would have been like, "Meh." But it got funded in 24 hours. And we just, you know, it has grown exponentially since we started it. And it's just been... It's been better and more amazing than anything, any project I've ever done. And I'm grateful and awed by it. You know, Noah sends me numbers on a week-to-week basis of this many people downloaded the show. And I can't believe more than two people ever want to listen to me say anything.
That's what this one does to me on a weekly basis.
Oh, yeah.
Comes back, dude, we just grew by like 2,500%. You're shitting me.
Someone gives a shit what we say? Eli Kostick wants to talk to us?
What the fuck is happening here? But it's God damn. I'm actually kind of curious about the list of things that you guys have watched on GAM, because it sounds like you're not just I appreciate that you're not just attacking sort of the ideology that the films are built from, but you're attacking the technical problems. Is it just a case of you think there might be better experiences if they were a little bit more technically proficient as movies, or is it the whole package that sucks 90% of the time?
I mean, it's almost always the whole package that sucks. It's interesting because they're different kinds of terrible. So, like, for our year anniversary, we're doing a live show here in Manhattan.
which was
sold out, and then we just added standing room tickets too, which is very exciting. By the time people hear this, it'll be gone.
VIP patron, right?
Yeah, boom. But you know, we're doing Passion of the Christ, which is an incredibly well made movie. But like, it's really well made. But like, when you look at it through a comic lens, when you step back, you're just like, all the scenes with Satan, and we're in an audio medium, but all the scenes with Satan, he just rolls through like Luigi. He's just like, he just gives Jesus the stink eye as he's getting beat up.
He's got this weird Voldemort visual style to
exactly.
him.
Exactly. And he's got a baby with an old man face, and he's just like, looks like someone's getting whipped.
I'm going to return this to the Benjamin Button set. Yeah.
Sassy gay Satan. And it's just, you know, you look at it's ridiculous. You know, you recognize how much of that movie is just Jesus falling down. I mean, there's a...
I'm not sure if I have to stop for a moment, because I'm not sure if that phrase is going to be the name of my new prog rock band or the name of the new animated series I'm going to start as soon
Sassy Gay Satan.
Sassy Gay Satan.
Even better than Mystic Spiral.
I like Sassy Gay Satan. Yeah. I'll come listen to you at Battle of the Bands. So, like, there are well-made movies that are fun to watch in that way. There are terribly made movies which are fun to watch. But then there are things that are, like, sort of well-made that you can make fun of, and the performances are okay, but the ideas are just abhorrent. Mm-hmm. The one we're doing this week, or at this point, last a few weeks ago, when this airs, is called The Accidental Activist, which is about a guy who signs a petition for traditional marriage, and then the gays in the town all protest his business, and it's like, it's so hard to do, and they're just like, well, if you apologize, we'll leave you alone, and he's like, I can't, I love Jesus too much, and it's literally like, hey, I wonder how those gay bakers who won't make cakes for gay people feel. Like, where's their movie? And the answer is The Accidental Activist. That's their movie.
Is the ACLU the bad guys in that one, too?
It's gay people. It's just gay. It's the, like, LGBT group in the community are the bad guys. It's amazing.
Hey, do you mind if you, do your jobs and not threaten to kill us with stones every week? Fuck you!
No. Now watch my sad movie about how hard it is when you're mad at me for that.
Oh, Lord.
We need to make our own, like, questions that we should ask SJW video and make it go viral.
With blackjack and hookers.
And, nice. In fact, forget the video. Yeah. And the blackjack. So, Eli, how has it been since you started GAM? Well, since you guys started GAM, now that you're approaching 50 episodes and that the show has grown so much, has the experience of being on a show like that changed the other side of the equation that we were talking about earlier beyond just... people who know you from GAM being surprised that you're talking seriously.
I mean, it definitely is. It's proven to me more and more how important it is for me to reach out to both sides of that conversation. You know, we were recently on The Thinking Atheist, and as silly as this seems, the number one comment on the video is Eli's a rare case. He's an SJW with a sense of humor. And that means that I'm reaching people. And that actually means a ton to me. I love that I can be an ally to people who need it. I love that someone can come to the darkest, dirtiest side of atheist comedy and go, oh, those guys are on side. Like, those guys welcome me. That's a place where I can be safe, where I can laugh, where I can be part of the joke, where I can be in on the joke, right? Because that's when you're in, right? You know, you hang out with a group of friends a few times, and the first time they go, Tony's the fat guy, you're like, I'm in, I get it, I'm the fat guy, all right. You know, and that's
Conover.
Right, exactly. That's important. You know, that ribbing is important, and feeling included and loved in that way is important. At the same time, there are people on the other side of the argument who think I'm funny, who know I'm a comedian, who know how much I value free speech, and hear me talk about social justice issues, and they pause. And they go, okay, well, this is a guy who works way bluer than me, who has way edgier things to say than I do. Why is it that he's not concerned about these things? Why is it that he feels like he needs to ally? Shouldn't he be being attacked? And shouldn't I? If the thesis that these people are putting forward is true, that SJWs want to stop free speech, wouldn't I be their first target, right?
Yeah, yeah, I know what you're saying. Absolutely.
So I sort of managed to, the more audience we reach, the more I try to make sure that I very clearly align myself to the people who need it and extend a hand across the aisle when I can.
Very cool.
Indeed. And the most recent debate you were on, the gun debate, mm-hmm. like I was listening to that and it reminded me a lot of seeing John Cleese debate a bunch of Catholic priests where he went in and thought that he would just get, you know, schooled and shut down and the priest would lecture him and correct him. And John Cleese goes in with rational arguments, statistics and everything. And the priest sort of reacted the way that you would caricaturize them. Like, it was so good that I'm sitting there going, you got to listen to this. Eli just, you know, has is doing an amazing job here, which I've come to expect from you. But I imagine that's gotten you some people who are reacting to that, like the guy who does the dick jokes is suddenly being really super serious, guys. Yeah. So if you could take us through some of those debates you've had on Atheistically Speaking and how you've approached them, I'm very interested to know.
I mean, you know, so the first debate I did on Atheistically Speaking was with James, James Lindsay. Mm-hmm. And that was a 4-hour debate on social justice.
And I listened to all 4 hours of it.
Wow, you got time on the middle of the road to do so. Yeah.
Some of which I was happy with, some of which I was less happy with. But I think that the points were made in a way that was important. I think I said things that needed to be said and challenged points that needed to be challenged. And then I was obviously on with Travis, and we talked about gun control. And, you know, what I originally had wanted to do with Thomas is I called Tom, or I texted, so I text Bother Thomas. I basically live tweet all his shows at him via text. I'm like, hey, why'd you say this? And he did a thing about guns, and I was like, dude, we should go on and we should just do like top 6 gun myths that pro-gun people believe, and we should just go through and bang them all out, like hunters, boom, self-defense, doesn't work, blah, 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 Second Amendment, you don't understand what you're talking about. Like, just go through and... And he was like, let's see if we can get someone. And so Travis volunteered, and he literally just reached out on Facebook. And Travis is a fan of GAM. And you know, to Travis's credit, I think Travis, you know, a lot of people were like, oh, you know, he didn't blah, 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 you won so bad. That's less interesting to me. I think Travis represented those ideas honestly, which is, I want the thing. I want it. Okay, well, what if we give you a thing that looks just like it, but it shoots BBs, and you can't kill kids or a nightclub full of gays with it?
Yeah, and
what the thing I want is mine.
I certainly meant no disrespect to Travis.
I didn't think
you would. But it's more along the lines of that is such a hard conversation to have, and we've had some like that on our show, but we've had to make statements like we're not anti-gun, you know, like that, and we've talked about. We talked with someone who was a sexual assault victim. Yep. We've talked to people who were victims of trans bullying.
We talked to a gentleman who was actually in the Paris terrorist attacks. Yeah,
that was recently. That was episode 42. Yep. So more the point I was trying to say is if a lot of people even started to say some of the things that you were brave enough to say about guns, they get shouted down immediately to the point of, you know, just not even allowed to have an opinion because how dare you, America, fuck yeah.
At this point, I almost want to call it, more so than like any kind of mainstream Christianity, the de facto religion in America is worship at the altar of the gun. It's one of those things where I have a number of friends on Facebook, and guns get brought up a lot on my feed in our conversations and such because of, every other week, what tends to happen in this country. So it's always very, very tough to engage. And I've realized very, very quickly that the reason it's always so tough to engage is because most of the time people who are very, very pro-gun, not like enthusiasts, not like people who say, I own a gun, but et cetera. The hard part about dealing with that other side of the debate is they're always coming from a position of absolute fear. And it's such a hard nut to crack to even begin having a conversation, because it's, I've made the comments that it's reminding me of some of the weird geek culture debates that I've gotten into about comic books, about film, about video games, where the slightest change to the status quo or the slightest hint that maybe the status quo needs to be changed is treated as a nuclear bomb level event. And my, Mike, I just end up always with that same question. How do you break through that?
Well, it comes back to this same thing, and this is how people close their mind, because what I would say people value above the gun and what the gun represents, what we fetishize in America that isn't fetishized anywhere else in the world, is freedom with a capital F.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the gun represents freedom, because if you ask people who are extremely pro-gun, they genuinely think they could overthrow the government. The Bundys thought it was going to go well. They were going to take the bird shelter, and then the people were going to rise up and stand next to you like a dinner for today.
And what they got instead was us sitting on the sidelines eating popcorn, sending them gummy dicks.
Right, we sent them gummy dicks, and then we arrested them. They didn't matter enough to murder. They didn't even matter enough to murder.
That is so wonderful.
We were just all right, come on, put your gun down or we'll shoot you. And one guy, we was like, no, I'm going out. And we were like, fine, plant, there you go. Now you're
I'm going to put that on a t-shirt next to it's not about you. You're not important enough to murder.
Not important enough to murder. And so, you know, and the thing is, a lot of people fear numbers. People fear experts. There's a dumbing down culture that Trump plays on excellently. Mm-hmm. You know, we are a... Yeah, my fellow burners, and obviously I'm with her now. But my fellow burners were really sore because I thought Bernie was great, and I was excited about a lot of the things that Bernie said. But the truth of the matter is, we're a D-minus country with F-plus people. You don't get a B-plus president. Bernie was a B-plus president, and we didn't earn him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's really hard as Americans, you know, and I think it's Fitzgerald who says we're a nation of temporarily embarrassed millionaires.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the American. We're always, of course, we want the rich to get tax breaks. Any minute now, we're going to be rich. You know, the poorest areas in our nation do most politically for the rich. It's not the other way around. It's not New York City. It's not Wall Street that's making the laws that disenfranchise the poor. It's huge voting bases in Texas, which is the second poorest community in the world, that are strongholds for conservatism, which make it, you know, and it's crazy to see areas like just outside of Texas where there's, you know, three abortion clinics and they've just dealt with those laws at a Supreme Court level, to see voters whom those laws affect the most be a stronghold for the conservatism that's taking away the rights that they claim to hold dear. So it's baffling, but it's part of our own F-wording. I tried it twice. F-wording of freedom.
Yeah, there's that old slogan, if we only had a government as good as the people. I think we do, and that's the problem.
Exactly. We do. We do.
Yeah. You know, it's to add to the fetishizing, it's the John Wayne myth. You know, if I have a gun, suddenly I'm going to stand up and be the big action hero. But when I was actually listening to your debate with Travis, what I was saying to the person riding in the car with me was, the scariest thing to me about having a gun in the house, not even necessarily your gun, but a gun, is that consciously or subconsciously, it becomes an option.
Yes.
Yep.
Not necessarily for murder, not necessarily for suicide, but when a stressful, scary situation hits, whether or not you mean to, it is automatically something that could happen.
And yeah. My biggest philosophical problem is that it's become the first order optimal option for people who want to do awful things with awful tools to do them with.
Right. It makes everything... Guns make everything worse in the majority of the situations. And, you know, the example I gave towards the end of the debate is, if I have a robot that delivers delicious NARS bars once out of 100 times, but 99% of the time it rapes everybody in the house. It's not a good robot.
Ooh.
And it doesn't matter how many people alcohol kills or how many people car crashes kill. It's a bad robot. We don't want that robot anymore. Nor does it matter how delicious the Mars bars are. Even if they're king size, the raping of the whole people 99 times out of 100, and that's the statistical thing that you need to get through to people, is when people buy a gun, they go, this is to defend my family. And I can go, no, man, it is to kill you or your loved one, because that's what it's way more likely to do, right? If I told you, wouldn't buy a guard dog and be like, good puppy, and I'd be like, yeah, that's a great guard dog. It's called a golden retriever, and 9 times out of 10, it'll rip your throat out. But 1 time out of 10, it'll get the bad guy. Like, no, I want the one that works on bad guys.
I always think, like, people who say, I want to get the gun to protect myself, my first question is always, from what or from who?
Right.
Most of the time I hear from the government, it's like, you should not have a gun.
Yeah. The government has
paypal. Right.
I'm going to challenge that John Wayne idea. Challenge the action hero idea with the words of another action hero. This isn't the Wild West, okay? The Wild West wasn't even the Wild West. Hurting people's not a good thing.
There are rules here. This isn't Nam.
Stallone, I'm going to use the words of Stallone against the perception of John Wayne. Yes.
That was from the movie Wild Wild West, which many of you know starred Sylvester Stallone and Morgan Freeman.
Where can I invest in this film project? This sounds like a great idea.
Patreon.com. /godawful.
Oh, man.
I don't even know my own Patreon.
So, you know, of the 45 movies that you've had to review on GAM, I know just shifting there a bit just because something you said reminded me of it. Of all the movies you had to watch, which one was the single most fun to rip apart?
Oh, wow. That is so hard. It might be Audacity because Ray Comfort. But it also might be Rockets Your Decision.
Oh, Lord. I've been in disbelief that film exists ever since I first saw Brad Jones review it years ago. It's an amazing piece of shit from start to finish.
Magical. It's magical. Because you get it with some of the Christian movies. And I want to point that there are some Christian movies, like Do You Believe, where you're just like, all right, it's about, like, look, I get it. If you believe in leprechauns, you'd make a movie about how awesome it is to believe in leprechauns. Like, boom. But where the bad guy of your movie is music, that's so many steps from I believe in a sky wizard to fucking music.
I've always wanted to ask, actually, how do you three, how does your notes taking process work? Do you guys have like individual notebooks? Do you have like a Google Doc that you're all linked to?
We have a Google Doc that we all use. And basically what we do is we just, as we watch, whoever watches it first breaks down the scene with the first line and what's going on so mm-hmm. that the rest don't get lost. And then you just put your notes in that chunk until the next scene, et cetera, all the way down.
Do you guys take like laptops and stuff into the movie theaters if you're seeing something in cinema?
If I see it in the cinema, I will usually take my laptop. I go and see the movie on like a Tuesday at 4. And I'll either bring, if it's busy, and because the only people that are ever in my movies with me are little old black ladies and atheists seeing it ironically. But I'll sit at the very back with my phone. I'll take notes on my phone and then I'll transition those onto my computer from there. But I have brought a laptop in and had people be mad at me for having a laptop. But as I've explained to them in the moment, this is a terrible movie.
So, you know, that's GAM. But, of course, you've been recently become a full-time part of the Scathing Atheist show as well. Have you found that to be more challenging, different? You know,
definitely more challenging. Because it's news, you know, and this is how a lot of the people who listen to our show get their news. And one of the things that it's interesting to do a FUBU show, you know, for us, by us. It's interesting to do that for people and to hear the feedback that we get, which is a lot more serious than the feedback we get at GAM. I mean, people love GAM, and I'm glad. And GAM also crosses more lines than Scathing Atheist does. We have a ton of Christian listeners and religious listeners to GAM who are just like, they're bad movies with bad ideas. I get it. Fun. but Scathing is for a lot of people, it is the refuge in a sea of Christianity, you know, because nobody knows what's going on in your earbuds. So there are people that are like, I'm sitting next to all my Christian coworkers. They don't know I'm listening to you. And that, you know, that's a huge weight that is not a mantle that I had picked up before, but something that's important, you know, something that's important. You know, when we did Vulgarity for Charity, which you brought up earlier, you know, I did that little bit. Someone asked us to roast their dad or their stepfather or their dad who wasn't speaking to them anymore because they were an atheist. And we did sort of a real genuine rant about that. Not a roast joke. And we got, you know, 100 emails and messages and tweets from people being like, that meant the world to me. You know, I haven't spoken to my dad in this amount of time. And we forget, because that doesn't make the news, right? Parents who cut off the relationship with their atheist kid doesn't get a highlight, doesn't get a news, but it's thousands of people's stories. It's tens of thousands of people's stories. And oftentimes the place where they run to, the place where they go is us. Mm-hmm. The place that they can be safe, their safe space, if you will, is us and our show. And, you know, that's a huge weight to pick up and something that I've tried to bear with the responsibility and care that it deserves.
Absolutely.
That's very cool, man.
It really is. I mean, neither one of us have strained relationships with our parents, fortunately.
Thankfully.
But just to give you some perspective on this area, we're across the river from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. and there's a town near us called Mechanicsburg, mm-hmm. which might be population 5,000, if that.
Ish, yeah.
104 churches in Mechanicsburg proper.
There are three in a row just on Simpson Ferry Road.
And in our town, this little New Cumberland, mm-hmm. there's a Methodist church across the street from a Methodist church. Like, you know, that's the biggest reason besides, you know, the bigotry and the assholery and the holery, the now bullshit. Besides that, that's the biggest reason I get mad at this self-persecution complex that has become so prevalent in the last couple of years.
Mm. What's Christianity without a persecution complex, though?
Sure.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. it's all built on the guy being like, ow.
Now, how much of that mentality do you run into doing the shows that you guys do?
I mean, we get the occasional Christian who comes to us and is like, you're mean, you shouldn't say that. They're rare. And we, you know, they get one polite message and then we tell them to fuck themselves. You know, there's one, there's almost, I would say once a month or so, someone comes onto a post and goes, you should know Jesus loves you and the light of the Lord. And I comment, hey, I know you mean this from a good place. This probably isn't the place to do that. And they delete their comment. Or if they reply, I go, you should go fuck yourself. You look like Tom Waits gargling a dick or whatever. Because I immediately let them know this is not going to be a debate.
No.
All right, whatever it is, this is not the place. Where we get way more is tone policing from atheists. What we get a ton is people who write us and go, you know, you're not doing the right thing by saying when you make fun of religion. My grandmother really loves God, and she's super sad that my grandpa's dead. And she thinks he's still around. He's just ignoring her. He's just in heaven ignoring her, and he's just like, fuck that bitch, and he's super glad she's not there yet. But then they're going to be together forever, even though he hit her. So I don't know. Anyway, you're mean. Stop it. I've never listened to the Friendly Atheist podcast, which exists for people like me.
Don't the vows clearly say till death do us part? I think he's in the free and clear.
Oh, he's up there just take that, Catherine Hepburn.
That's what I want in my heaven, goddammit.
any kind of Catherine Hepburn. You could go Philadelphia Catherine Hepburn or on Golden Pond. I would fuck either Catherine Hepburn.
Sold.
Oh, both a threesome with, because basically on Golden Pond, Catherine Hepburn is already a vibrating bed.
Oh, God. What I wouldn't give to hear Gam do some of those old classic movies, like just some of those, because
oh my God, like films like The Godfather.
Yeah, like good movies. I would love to see.
Not even that. Just like, how about some of the old classic, really good debauched Cecil B. DeMille style Bible epics, you know, Samson and Delilah, fucking Ben-Hur.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of comedy and comedy references, I'm not sure how many people have picked this up from you, Eli, but I am quite aware that you are very obviously a fan of Patton Oswalt from references you make. Who is a fantastic human being that I was fortunate enough to meet 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. But outside of Patton Oswalt, who has been your biggest influence since we are currently, well, at least I'm currently looking at my biggest influence as far as podcasting goes.
I've apologized for that. Again, I want to say my going to rehab. my influences, I took a lot of improv when I was in college. Sure. And that was a huge part of it, was getting improv training and learning to listen. Jason Mendzoukas, who a lot of people will know from How Did This Get Made, was a teacher at UCB at the time, and I used to go see his shows all the time. And so he just hugely influenced me. You know, Tom Segura, who's not as well known a comedian, but is just brilliant. His first album, Thrilled, is so insanely funny, like screamy funny. You know, Brian Regan, I spent a ton of time listening to him as a kid. Like, he was the comedy I was allowed. I grew up reading a lot of George Carlin. You know, a lot of people go to classic comics like Bruce and Hicks, who I also love, but like, you have to understand them in their time. Like, there's no question that if Hicks were alive, he'd be a 9/11 truther today. And like, we have to accept that about ourselves. His final album is him being like, "The government shot first at Waco," and you're like, "Oh, Billy, baby."
Have you heard the urban legend that Bill Hicks is not really
Alex Jones?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes,
it's not human intelligence.
Oh God,
fat fuck.
I would love for that to be true.
Right.
I would love for that to be true, but yeah, I mean, you know, I listen to a ton of comedy. I read a ton. You know, people, the big question that I love to get is sort of like, where do you get your jokes from? And I get my jokes from avidly consuming pop culture. You know, I try to watch at least 2 episodes of every television show that's available on TV. You know, I see 2 episodes of The Bachelor and The Biggest Loser, and I read as many fantasy books and classic books and sci-fi books as I can. And that's why our constant joke is one guy. Like, our joke is often, you know, we'll make 10 jokes in a show that are just for one listener. And that listener will be like, "Did you make a Joe Abercrombie reference?" And I'll be like, "You're damn right I did." You know, "Is that a Name of the Wind joke?" And I'm like, "Yeah." Yep.
Damn right. That's how I kind of felt with some of your Patton references, because they weren't explicitly Patton. They're just for, you know, nerds like us who've listened to it 50 times.
Eating my lunch from a single bowl.
See the meat display.
Although I got to say, my favorite joke of yours is something I'm probably going to put on a friggin' t-shirt, which is Jingly Keys.
Jingly Keys.
That has consumed our house as well.
Uh-huh. We probably say it at least once a day in this house.
Pretty much.
Tracy from Friendly Atheist used it the other day online, and it made me really happy to see like that level of conversation, like her just using that as common parlance. I was just like, "Oh yes, I believe that is referred to as the Jingly Keys fallacy."
thank you. Congratulations, sir. You have officially become memetic.
That's right.
So, Eli, we won't take up too much more of your time here. You're a busy guy with things to do and all, and spending time with a couple of schmucks in a kitchen. I'm glad you even responded to us. Tell Noah to respond to my damn emails. Sorry. That's a running joke on our show, because I've emailed him on 8 different platforms, and he has never answered me.
When's the new Skeptocrat coming out?
Yeah, exactly. To be fair, though, Noah is the busiest human I've ever met, because he's a workaholic. Like, and I thought I was a super hard workaholic, but like, he does, not only does he do all our shows, but when he's not doing a show, like, I've tried to make it easier on him, and he's like, "Yeah, man, you've made it easier. I'm really glad. That's now I get to work on these 7 books I'm writing." And I'm just like, "No, you were supposed to have a day off and have a sandwich." And he's like, "No, it's okay. I find I can type on 2 computers if they're on either side of me at once." And I'm like, "I don't think that's physically possible."
It's got to be how he stays thin, I guess.
But yeah, I mean, it's certainly not with malice. I understand that he's incredibly busy, but it was so
Noah
cool.
Noah fucking hates you.
Probably. He probably does. And I wouldn't blame
with
him.
Good I'm sorry reason. To tell you. Noah fucking hates you.
Well, I
That's
I
what sent me on this show to say.
email.
It's like, I'm a patron, hate me. So, VIP.
You're not a patron, you're a target.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm good with that. So, Eli, last question here before you go tell Noah what an asshole I am again. If you had a message similar to the stepdad story, because I'm not going to count on the fact that everybody who listens to our show knows what we're talking about with that, what would you say to any in-the-closet atheist or otherwise oppressed minority who might be listening to this and is looking for a way to begin living their lives in the open?
Find your allies. They are around you in a way that you can't expect. They're around you in a way that you don't know. There's a guy at your work who says he doesn't go to church that often. He's an atheist. There's a guy on the, there's a guy who you've never talked to about religion who just shuts his mouth when those conversations come up. He's an atheist. There's someone at your hair salon who's an atheist. You've got a friend. There's someone at your church. There's someone in your community. And I think a lot of people, when they think of coming out in any way, whether it's coming out as gay or whether it's coming out as trans or whether it's coming out as an atheist, they think they need to burst through the doors and be like, fuck you, I don't believe in God, motherfuckers. And, I never had to go through that. I turned to my parents in college and I was like, I don't believe in God. And they were like, pass the potatoes, man, whatever. and religious Jews, but also who cares? So, you can find allyship. And also, you live in the internet age. You've got allyship in the communities of these shows. If you're listening to this show, get on those comments, get on those message boards, get on our face, get on a fan Facebook page and start friending people. It's a lot easier, and I see this all the time, and I'm always super proud of the people that do it. It's a lot easier to come out as an atheist if you have 500 Facebook friends who are atheists, so that when Auntie Clara's like, oh, well, that's so gross, you should go to hell and fuck yourself. If 90 of your atheist friends jump on her and they're like, fuck you, Aunt Clara, you look like Tom Waits gargling a dick. It helps, and you have a support network, and the internet provides that in a way and in a place and in a time that we've never had before. And, I'm sure you would say this to any of your listeners, but if you're alone and you can't think of a community to reach out to, you can reach out to me. I'm on Facebook, Eli Bosnick. Look me up, reach out on Twitter. I'll find you 10 atheist groups that are less than an hour drive away from you, and you'll be partying with David Smalley or any of those Southern guys. In less than a day. It's easy to feel, David parties hard. David parties hard and David fucks hard. Nobody fucks like Smalley fucks. That's really what I came on this show to say. That's how I'm going to tweet this show so that he has to listen to the entire hour. I'm just going to tweet, nobody fucks the way David Smalley fucks Eli Bosnick. And then I'm just going to send it out.
Rated R.
Hey. We'll take the views any way we can get them.
And then I'll debate him on it. I'll be like, David, debate me. My point is that nobody fucks the way you fuck. And he'll be like, I don't fuck the way I fuck. Lots of people fuck the way I fuck.
Sigh.
Eli, thank you so much for spending some time with us. And thank you for everything that you do in the community, both from a comedic and a social justice standpoint. It really means the world to a lot of people, ourselves included.
Oh, thank you all so much for having me on. This was a ton of fun.
Yeah.
Driving up toward Green Bay, then east, the sun's in the rearview mirror. Both had some pretty tough weeks. White knuckles try to steer. A few more miles, there's no telling what we'll find. All we gotta do is take a little time. We all gotta find our own ways to love and hope and breathe again. For some that just happens to be on the shores of Lake Michigan. You can't explain the way a city grips your mind. All we gotta do is take a little time for you and me and the moon and Lake Michigan. Flow right in and hair rocks that vanish from our sight. Kinda like those troubles that wash away quicker in the moonlight. This crazy old world's got no reason or rhyme. All we gotta do is take a little time for you and me and the moon and Lake Michigan. Little to no chance for all that stormy weather, no. It appears conditions won't get much better for you and me and the moon and Lake Michigan. Sometimes this old world seems much worse than it should be. Couple days later, you're sitting and thinking how lovely. I won't question the scope or design. All I gotta do is take a little time for you and me and the moon and Lake Michigan.
Great talking to you finally.
Yes, and it's so nice to see the face of the voice that I hear in my car at least once a day.
Yeah, really.
I'm told I don't look bald enough or whatever.
And Noah looks like he should be taller, right?
Yeah. Noah should be taller, Keith should be shorter and fatter, and Noah should be bald.
All right. Thanks a lot, Eli. I look forward to the bumpers, and when this show comes out, I'll be sure to tag you since you just friend requested me, which totally made my day. Before this made my day.
All right. I am stopping. Great. And now I'm going to record the bumpers. Can I record them while I'm on the line with you to make sure I do it right?
Certainly.
All right. 1 second. I need to get my script here. I need my script. Make sure I say it right. Oh, God. Oh, it's okay. No, I just got several angry emails. just FYI in the first words. Never a good chance. Never a good sign. It's never going to go well after someone says just FYI.
I got to find you on Skype and chat with you for a while because we got a lot that I think you and I can share, just both between the D&D and the fantasy shit and also improv. Yeah. I was in school out in Pittsburgh. I joined an improv troupe and we actually got trained by a guy from the Upright Citizens Brigade.
Nice. Who was the guy?
Oh, Chris. Oh, Jesus Christ. I cannot remember his name. It's been like 7 years.
Chris Roberti?
No.
All right. And then, of course, we did improv with Uncle Yo on stage recently.
I've been blessed to have a lot of supportive people.
He's officiating my wedding next month.
Yeah.
Nice.
A lot of really supportive people in the convention community out in Techo in Pittsburgh. That I've gotten up to do main events comedy with guys like Uncle Yo. We were up on stage with fucking Zordon from Mighty Morphin Power Rangers at Quarter Running. So.
All right, here we go. Ready?
Yep.
Am I recording? No, now I'm recording. All right. And I'm saying, this is Eli Bosnick from God Awful Movies, and you're listening to Inciting Incident because you're too sexy not to.
Nice, nice, fantastic.
Hey, gang, hey, gang. This is Ray Kampfer from Living Waters Ministries, and you're listening to Inciting Incident because you're a heathen and you should know better. Huh? Spider-Man. This is Ben Carson from the Republican Party. I seem to have trapped myself in my Honda Accord, but you're listening to Inciting Incident because otherwise you wouldn't be hearing my voice to talk.
Oh my God.
This doesn't sound like Ben Carson so much as like John Stewart's impression of Lindsey Graham.
Yeah.
Can I ask you for one more thing just because it is a household thing for us? Can you say you're listening to it because poof, jingly keys, please? Yeah.
Give me one second. I'm going to do another one. All right. This is Eli Bosnick from God Awful Movies and the Scathing Atheist, and you're listening to Inciting Incident because poof, jingly keys, jingly keys.
Thank you so much, Eli. This was a blast, and I look forward to meeting you at the VIP thing.
Oh, wait. I think I didn't record that last one.
Oh, okay. No!
1 second. Wait. All right. Now I'm recording. This is Eli Bosnick from God Awful Movies and Scathing Atheist, and you're listening to the Inciting Incident podcast because poof, jingly keys, jingly keys. All right, good. Now,
thank you so much, man.
I just put this on. I'm gonna put this on Dropbox and then send you. I'm gonna put this on Dropbox and send it to you. Right.
All
right.
Yep.
Okay, and, great.
This will air 3 weeks from tomorrow because we post episode 44 tomorrow, and this is 50. We go twice a week, so.
No problem. Awesome, guys. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you.